Thank you so much, Kevin, for coming.
Thank you for having me, sir.
I understand you have to leave us soon to go and pick up your baby, Kayla.
I do. I got
in Daly City.
Yeah, I do.
Family first, right? That's what I'm talking about. And we got Carol Harvey, who is a long-term environmental activist and a freelance writer. And hi, Carol.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming to Savisco Village Voice. We're going to start with Kevin. Again, thank you so much. I know how busy your schedule is. When you appointed on the Office of Citizen Complaint as the director?
April 2003.
Wow, already. So right after Prop H, correct?
Prop H was actually in the making and was voted in November of 2003.
Which was the nomination of a restructuration of the police commission.
Correct. Proposition H included, amongst other things, an expansion of the police commission from 5 to 7 members. There would be an appointment by the mayor of 4 members and the appointment of 3 members by the Board of Supervisors. All appointments must have been approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
And there would be staggered terms, so the mayor would appoint 2 when they first came to term and 2 after the mayor's second year of being a mayor.
So in other words, 4 by the mayor and 3 by the people.
Correct. And the reason behind that was they were looking for balance, being that we have district elections with the Board of Supervisors. You're getting the voice of the people through the supervisors in their 3 picks, and then there would be 4 by the mayor. They were trying to do away with politicization of the board,
right,
by having just the mayor appoint commissioners.
Right. So we were headed towards a true civilian oversight board.
That's correct. They were looking for a little bit more balance.
Right.
A little more balance.
Tell us a little bit about what you were doing before you became the director of OCC.
Before, I went to law school here, Golden Gate University, San Francisco.
Wow.
Graduated from there in 97, passed the bar, and went to work for the Sheriff's Department as a prison and legal services attorney. So I'd go into the jails and actually interact with the folks in jail, assisting them with their non-criminal legal matters. Coming out of there, I was a public defender from 1999 to 2003. I was a San Francisco public defender. And then I was appointed to the
office. Impressive. So you have been on many sides of the fence, actually.
I have seen, in all of them, I was always working with, I've always worked with the criminal justice system, but I was either defending individuals that were charged with crimes, or I was assisting people who had been charged with crimes in other matters, or in this matter, I'm investigating people who have complaints for people who feel abused by the police.
Do you mind if I get a little personal?
Go ahead.
How does it feel as a black man to be at the head of the Office of Citizen Complaint?
I mean, it was quite an honor to be appointed. You know, and I know they went through a selection process, and I was honored that my name was given to the mayor, and I was honored that the police commission at the time agreed and nominated me, and I was very honored that Mayor Brown gave me the chance to do this. It's a tough job, tough position to be in, because
right,
there's a lot going on out in the streets that I witnessed before. I went to high school here. I went to Lowell High School in the city.
Wow.
So, you know, I've grown up in San Francisco. I've seen a lot.
Nationwide?
High School in the city. You know, and I see my friends on both sides of the fence. Some
right.
are complainants. Some are police officers.
I wouldn't be surprised that some member from your family maybe would have been criminalized.
Oh, yeah. I have both. I currently have a cousin in L.A. who is a Pasadena police officer.
Wow.
I've got folks that ran into a few problems, you know, I had to do some assistance. I have one cousin doing about 15 years on the drug charge.
Wow.
You know, maybe wrongly on the drug charge. There's a lot of question. And I had a cousin who was a police officer who was slain in the line of duty back in like 1968 or 69. So, you know, there's a plaque that hangs on our wall that constantly reminds me of the dangers on both sides of the fence.
So your family knows the grief and the pain of losing someone to violence.
Yes, yes. And the last 5 shootings in the city have directly affected either a friend or family member of somebody in our office.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Kevin, you have an impressive team of investigators on your staff. And I understand that for the past 3 years, there's been a lot of controversy and sometimes raging controversy about the OCC. And recently, Gary Delaney attacked one of the investigators, Susan Lapp, for publicizing that supposedly the department was requesting anonymous complaints from citizens.
What occurred was the Police Officers Association had concerns and voiced concerns and allegations that Susan Leff, who was actually our litigating attorney, Susan Leff litigates the cases that are brought before the commission and the chief. So she litigates these cases against police officers. The Police Officers Association really felt that Ms. Leff might have engaged in solicitation of an anonymous complaint, which was investigated by our office and found to be a baseless accusation.
I remember specifically the email, the exchange between Susan Leff and myself as the director of the Biscayne Foundation, and I had forwarded to your office an email about what we thought was the wrongful death of Craig Holden and the shooting of Tyrell Taylor, who was shot by police 5 times in the back. And I remember that Susan actually responded by saying, if anyone witnesses, by all means, we need to hear from it. That is hardly boiling down to aggressively soliciting anonymous report. And by the way, I read all the SFPD newsletters of the Jewish district. On all of them at the end, it says anonymous tip line. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an aggressive outreach for anonymous reporting?
You're absolutely correct.
Are they violating their own policy?
Well, no, but I'll tell you, Misha, back in 1983 when the OCC was developed, there were rules, and the rules put forth by the commission and voted on and approved by the commission the state that we should have aggressive outreach to the public and encourage people to bring complaints if they feel there's perceived misconduct. The anonymity factor allows people to come forward without fear of retaliation or retribution.
Right.
Many people feel fearful coming forward and talking to a police officer, or making a complaint about a police officer, simply because we're not there as protectors. We're there to investigate. And we can't guarantee protection of somebody who's filed a complaint against an officer. So to avoid not having those complaints come forward, the police commission back in 1983 decided we will allow anonymous complaints. And so it's a practice that's been long-standing for
20+ years.
It's not a violation. And I remember the email that you sent around. In fact, I received that same email. Right. And on many occasions, Misha, I've answered you and other folks asking for clarification. Is this to be taken as a complaint? I would like clarification.
Right.
Yes or no? Somebody says, no, I do not want to complain. That's
their
story, and we don't do it.
Well, I've been emailing you, you know, the alerts that I get from the community on general purpose, not necessarily always as a complaint, but I can understand the essence of your question. Your agency is definitely under fire right now.
Always.
And I cannot even imagine how taxing it is on your staff and on yourself. How did you cope internally and personally?
I lift a lot of weight. I go to the gym.
I go to the gym, throw
a lot of weight. You know, my staff feels like they're doing the right thing. They feel that they're making a difference. They try and be as fair and as effective, as accurate in their investigations as possible. It is tough. You are never doing enough for the community. You are always doing more than the police department would want. There's always going to be questions. It seems like the agency is under constant scrutiny. But again, the scrutinization signifies to me that we are doing our job. In fact, I remember a judge once told me, when you come out of a plea bargain where nobody is completely happy, that's the best deal.
I understand that you have been always also trying to bring some efforts into maybe decentralizing the location of the intakes, as the location downtown might be intimidating for some folks who might have a warrant, who are not familiar with the neighborhood. We know, unfortunately, about turf war and the difficulty for our youth to leave their own neighborhood. And I understand that there has been a pilot instituted with, I believe, the Bayview Community Family Resource Center.
That's correct.
And so far, it doesn't look like anybody has been using the site.
That's correct. We thought decentralization was important currently you can file complaints on the radio, over the phone. We're working on it. Over the phone, through the internet, you can send in a letter by mail, or you can do it in person. Again, we are at 482nd Street. We're down by the ballpark. It is somewhat difficult for some individuals to get to us.
Sometimes they don't have the bus fare.
Some people don't have bus fare. It's a long way for folks to walk, and a lot of people don't drive.
Right.
We moved from the Hall of Justice originally because people felt it was intimidating coming to the Hall of Justice where there were a lot of law enforcement. The other areas that complaints can be filed currently are in police stations, but many times people don't feel very comfortable going into a police station if they just have a negative interaction with the police.
Right.
Not that they shouldn't feel comfortable going in, but that's just the reality.
Well, hopefully we'll see a time where we can be comfortable with the police and feel that they are our friends, like we did when you and I were growing up.
Correct, and not to say that it's not, I want to be very clear, it's not to say that it's not safe to go into the police station, but the perception of somebody who's just had a negative interaction, they really don't want to go to the police station to file a complaint. So we are looking at satellite offices. We started with the Bayview Family Resource Center. It was a pilot to test the waters. We disseminated information. They have been very helpful with us. We haven't had a large turnout, and we're not sure. We're analyzing the reasons why we haven't had a turnout.
Maybe Easy Study Foundation, which office is in the heart of Bayview, can help you to increase outreach for better utilization of that specific center for OCC intake. Maybe we can send some people your way and consolidate some of those mechanisms to make sure that it happens.
Well, and that's what we're currently working on now, is looking at different locations and, again, trying to determine what was the cause. Was the site too far away from folks? Did we not get enough information out? Again, you mentioned TERFs, people crossing territories.
Right.
So we're not only examining the Bayview, but the Mission District,
that's
the
right.
OMI, and the Western
Valley
Mission
Valley.
As well,
yeah.
and Visitation Valley.
So. And the Tenderloin.
And, of course, the Tenderloin, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Any word of wisdom from you? Where would you like to see your agency, let's say, in 2 years from now? What are your hopes and your dreams towards social justice? Is that big enough for you? You're going to be out there.
No, I don't. Words of wisdom. You know, I will say, I sat at that police commission meeting in the Western Edition the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I heard a lot of frustration, and I heard a lot of hurt, and I heard a lot of pain. I talked to a friend of mine.
Because our audience doesn't know what we're referring
to. Yes.
This was actually a joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors and the Police Commission at Ella Hill Community Center, Ella Hill Lodge, which is also the headquarters of the African American Community Policing Relations Board in the Western Edition San Francisco.
Correct. And the joint meeting was called In Response to Gun Violence and Deaths, the homicides within the community. Again, this was it was a joint meeting. The police commission holds meetings in the district station, the district areas, so that the community can come and voice concerns about the police and the community. This again was put together with the police commission, the board of supervisors, in light of so many homicides that have occurred in the past several months. It was an interesting meeting in that the people took charge of the meeting. The people voiced their concerns so loudly that the structure of the meeting shifted to address the public concerns. And it was hard to hear the frustration that I heard in that audience.
The intensity was something else.
Correct. And I know there's frustration with the police. I've heard the frustration with the police. I've heard the frustration with the city. I heard the frustration. I saw the tears of the people. A woman in our agency's cousin was killed in that very auditorium. The pain needs to stop. About a month ago, correct. A friend of mine outside of the agency, a police officer outside of San Francisco, said, you know, if San Francisco could just stop and start again. But we can't do that. We're a city that's in full swing. We're a city that has numerous resources and the ability to make things right. We just need to change. We need to start changing now. Everybody needs it. Now, and our office is under an audit right now. I don't know if people are aware of that. The police commission has authorized an audit by the control to examine our files and our systems to see if there can be improvement. Many people in our agency wonder why. That was the number one question, why? Why us? Why are we being put through this? Because it needs to be changed. There were questions in the community about the police department, the commission, the mayor's office, the Office of Citizen Complaints.
I will answer this, so this auto will answer the questions with us. Hopefully, we're just the first step in a series of changes.
You're in a very difficult position. It's important for you on a agency basis that you maintain, I would assume, an excellent relationship with the community, but also with the department.
Of course.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you danced that day?
It was, you know, being a public defender, I was a trial lawyer. And a trial lawyer means that you have to communicate on various levels in the various forms. Written communication, verbal communication. Coming from work in the city that dealt with both law enforcement and the community, I knew a lot of the players, and I understood coming into this job that communication was the key. You asked for words of wisdom. This process will not proceed if communication fails. Every time there's a failure of communication between the community and the police and the OCC, the community and the OCC, when there's a lack of communication, there is no chance for survival of the process. There is no chance for us to succeed. Everybody, through the pain, through the hurt, through the anger, we must continue to sit down and talk and work and make steps to move forward. Those are my words of wisdom. I told, there was a panel just several weeks ago on police reform.
Right.
And it was a hard panel to be at because there was a lot of criticism again of the OCC.
Was that in the city or in the
That was here in San Francisco. It was put on by police chief Tony Rivera and ex-police chief Jordan.
Right.
And they put together a panel of individuals to talk about police reform. Much of the discussion was about the Office of Citizen Complaints,
mm-hmm.
overextending its powers, abusing its powers. But yet again, I told them, just as I tell you here, I will continue to communicate and try and work through these problems mm-hmm. and listen to every concern and do my best to work with individuals and agencies until I can no longer do it. And the minute I can't do it, I will cease to be effective and I would have to move aside.
Did you receive any formal complaints about the infamous, so famous, and unfortunately, Bayview SFPD videotapes?
Yes, we do have a complaint, and it is currently under investigation.
Okay. I understand that now 7 or 8 tapes, but actually 29 tapes.
I'm not aware of the exact number of tapes, but we have received a complaint.
I got this through the grapevine, Reverend Amos Brown, director of and president of NAACP for San Francisco, for Bay Area, actually, and also on the African American Community Policing Board, actually personally viewed the tapes.
All 29?
Yes.
That would be interesting.
We went on KLYW, is it, or KLXW together 3 months ago, and he made a statement publicly on the air.
Yeah.
So that's all tapes that were realized on company time with company equipment.
Well, that's what our investigation, that's part of the investigation that we would be trying to determine that.
Right. I hope we get somewhere with this for, I'm a little bit ashamed to be a San Franciscan and be the laughing stock mm-hmm. of the world about those videotapes, to tell you the truth. And more so the individuals who were made fun of in terms of the transgender community, women, people of color, etc.
Well, again, mm-hmm. to make no judgments on what had occurred, what occurred with the videos,
right.
We all know, and I think we all understand, and I think the mayor and the chief addressed this directly and immediately, that the result of those tapes, regardless of the intent, was hard on the community.
It was very hard.
It was very hard on the community. Again, not making a judgment as to the intent or to the production or whatnot, but it was difficult for a community that already had a very tenuous relationship with the department. It was very difficult for a community to accept what was going on and to move forward. So I do hope that there will be some resolution one way or another. And if it's up to me and my agency, we're going to make sure that there is a resolution one way or another.
Where are you going to be on Juneteenth, Kevin?
That's Sunday.
That's Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, I will be out being a father on Father's Day. I'm being taken to my mother's birthday, my aunt's birthday. There's a lot of birthdays and then Father's Day. So
actually, tomorrow on the 17th, Sergeant DeLacy Davis, who just retired actually, mm-hmm. he was continuing his work, the founder and president of Black Ops Against police brutality, I'm very proud to say that he is my godchild. My godchild will be in town just for the day. He is now director of community policing in the Bermuda, and he's flying just for the occasion to be on the House Symposium about the gang truth at the African American Cultural Center in the Western Addition. I was supposed to be on the panel with him, and fortunately, there is also a national convention against police brutality at the Marriott Hotel in Oakland that is put together by G Film. I don't know if you've seen Every Mother's Son.
Every Mother's Son, yes.
Right, with Kadiatou Diallo, Doris Bush, and Mrs. Baez, who are all mothers who have lost their child to police brutality in New York. And G Film is actually doing a national convention on mothers and athletes.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I know there's a lot going on around the city. I do have a dual responsibility as a father, and I do believe there are several small birthday functions going on that I have to attend, but I'm aware of those and I would like to try to attend.
Kevin, as a black man, you're raising a beautiful 2 years old female child, Kayla. What should you tell Kayla in terms of safety? What will you tell Kayla about staying out of trouble and not being in harm's way? Well, raising a black child automatically, you know that your child is at risk for crime and criminalization. Well, how do you foresee the role as a black father to Kayla around this particular issue?
Well, you know, I am raising a young child, and she is African American. But as much of a chance as she has of going to crime and to all of the bad, she has the potential to be a physicist or a world-class figure skater. She has a world of opportunity in front of her, and I'm just hoping that I can lead by example. Any mistakes that maybe I made along the way that my parents corrected or maybe they missed that I am aware of, that I can transfer to her, and I will give her every opportunity that I had. Because I had the same challenges facing me as a child as you did, as everyone in this room did. White, black, Asian, we all grew up, we could have all, there are forks in the road, and it's all about decisions. And it will be incumbent on me and mine and her mother and my relatives and her relatives and all to instill in her good judgment, understanding, fairness, compassion for her fellow person, common sense, and all of the like. And that's what I will pass on.
Any safety measures that you would teach Kayla about remaining safe from the police? As a black child?
I'll tell you, right now, currently, my mom would say, oh, something happens, I'm going to call you. And I tell my mom, Mom, I want you to call the police. You need to call the police. Police are there for a reason. The police have a job to do. It's an institution that's been around for years. I would tell Kayla the same thing. It's incumbent on me to make sure that there's police accountability so that when my mother does call, or if my daughter calls, or if you call, or if anybody in this room calls, that the police will be there and the police will do the jobs that they're slated to do.
Do the right thing.
Right. Right. By the time she gets to where she needs to call the police, I'm hoping that she wouldn't have to have these concerns.
What is your outlook in San Francisco right now around community policing issues? Do you think that we're going to get there?
Oh, I think that we're moving towards, and I definitely think that that's something we need to institute. You can't ask the police to solve all the problems. That's not fair to the police. Everyone has to work together. Community policing brings the community and the police together. It instills trust. Trust is the glue here. You lose trust, this becomes an ineffective process. Trust and respect. You gain the trust, you gain the respect, you work together, and we can solve a lot of the problems that we're facing.
Anything you would like to say to our brothers and sisters out there in terms of process and making a complaint to get justice?
If you feel that there has been a negative, whether you're a victim or a witness, to what she thought was a negative interaction between an individual and a police officer, feel comfortable, feel free to come forward. Again, go to our website sfgov.org/occ.org.
Can you say that again?
It's SF, as in San Francisco, GOV, gov, one word, /occ.org. Go to the website, download the form, come to 480 2nd Street. Our phone number is 415-597-7711, or go to the police station. The police, by department general order, are mandated to take complaints from citizens, and they must take the complaint exactly as the citizen relates it to them.
They're not to editorialize. They're not to add their own personal comments. It's as if they were transcribing from a different language.
Right.
Feel comfortable going in and making the complaint. I understand that the police, as anybody, would hate to have somebody looking over their shoulder. It's accountability. It's a necessary tool. It's a management tool. It's only here to account for the actions of every police officer in the city to make sure that we have the most outstanding police department around. So feel free to come forward, please. You can do it anonymously. Come to the agency, talk to us, and we will do what we can to make sure that it's investigated.
Well, thank you so much for giving us this wealth of information today.
I appreciate it.
And I can see that you came with your knowledge and with your heart. And I'm grateful for it.
Caramba.
And I hope you will come back. You come back.
If you ask, you know I'll be here. Because I've been asking you anyway for months. I'm glad I'm here.
And you know, we're about to start our baby radio station also. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you the frequency on the air because I don't want the feds to come and confiscate the equipment, but we got to call.
Don't call me because I'm sure my phone is tapped. So
we will talk
write a note, slide under the door.
At the police commission hearing.
Right.
You
That's
are
smart.
Listening to San Francisco Village Voice on Enemy Combatant Radio. And we're going to be right back.
We're back in Command Radio, San Francisco Village Voice, Nisha, and her wonderful guest, La Misha.
And now we're going to hear from Carol Garvey, who I met very recently, actually, at our civil rights cookout in Bayview 2 weeks ago. We had more than 400 people, and I met this incredible woman. I'm proud to say that she's my second white friend, which is a big surprise to me. You know, remember when I say, and if you're white, you're still all right. Some of us, anyhow. Some of you. So I'm very glad to have you in my life. It has been actually a very healing experience talking around. You know, I just went through the anniversary of the 5th year of my child's murder by SFPD with confirmation from actually someone who was working at Cadet Sears. Who heard from an officer that he was so glad he wasn't on duty that night because it was planned. So you know the number that that hit on me. And I'm not the only one, you know. It's not just about Tibus Gates. It's on and on and on. And my interaction with you around those circumstances have been very healing.
Good.
So welcome, my white friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Kevin Allen is cracking you up.
Great to be here.
And so you are an environmental activist. You're also a reporter, a freelance reporter.
Right.
I understand that you are involved in fighting the land grab in San Francisco,
yes,
fighting eminent domain.
Yes.
And you also had some interesting information about Sharon Jones Center, the King Harvey Community Center in San Francisco?
King Garvey, yes, it's a cooperative. And where the shareholders there are largely African American. And the meeting that happened at Western Addition, there were many, many people from King Garvey who were there. You were talking about that meeting and the heat and the pain that was expressed. Those are the very assertive folks, many of whom live at this cooperative, which was really built back in the 60s as a response to urban renewal.
They just had an incredible Martin Luther King celebration back in February.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Carlos Levexier was the president, and they organized that. I was not
a legend in the city. This is the bomb. That's the brother.
Yeah. Yes. I had a chance to meet his father at that very same barbecue, the elder Carlos. My name, by the way, is Carol Harvey. And I am, that's H-A-R-V-E-Y. And I've been writing as a freelance social justice writer in San Francisco for the last 6-7 years, mostly for the American Friends Service Committee, but also print and online papers as well,
and
others.
And you write for the San Francisco Bayview at times.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I have a lot of articles about redevelopment, about the redevelopment thing that just went through in the Bayview.
What do you think about Mary Harrison, Green Action, running for supervisor for this week then?
Yay, Marie!
You know,
go,
Marie.
She was my first journalism teacher in San Francisco. She is a smoking lady. I love her. I think she would make a superb supervisor.
Right.
Plus, she's got an adorable little grandson who I'm totally in love with.
We're actually planning some house parties right now all over the city.
Great.
To raise some funds. You know, we have to match the funds. I'm the fundraiser. I'm poor, but I'm really good at raising money for other people. I even got a $500 check from the Libertarian Party, you know, the closest thing that you can imagine to the Republican, but the Rackless at the San Francisco Bayview, you said that I'm the best street hustler that they know. I'm getting busy.
Well, Marie is wonderful that you're, yeah. And I think, personally, it's really time for a change. Marie is very sharp lady.
And what are the issues that you feel that she can really tackle on in District 10 that, unfortunately, we haven't got much help with from our current supervisor?
I think that she is in touch with the grassroots far more. I think that the key thing about Marie is that she is in touch with the folks there, and she will work for them rather than telling them what to do. My feeling is that the current Supervisorial oversight is a bit detached from the people.
Know, we elected Sophie on the reputation of her mom.
Exactly.
And,
right.
You know, the union was behind her, of course, and she was an electrician at the time.
Right.
I do believe that Sophie is a good woman, but she has failed. She has failed her mandate.
Yeah.
And I have some concern about also how money and power changes your philosophical outlook. I remember 2 years ago at an event at the Opera House, Sophie approached me. I guess she, you know, my skin is white. She probably thought I was a white woman. And she pointed to three African-American homeless people pushing a cart at the corner and really twisting her mouth. She told me, we got to do something about these people.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Sophie, when did you become part of the You People clan?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you ever. You know. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we have seen that so much.
Right.
Earl Sanders used to be a really good guy before mm-hmm. he decided to indict Tennyson and Goff as lifers, bribing a 12-year-old Samoan girl to testify, make a positive identification on them. The girl eventually came to, and, you know, thanks to Jeff Adachi, we were able to free those two brothers. And the girl said, my mom was poor, I was paid. Still, Sanders enjoys retirement and a hefty pension, which is adored by the Oakland community, and had the goals to sue the city for $6.5 million for slander. So that's the, and you know, Willie Brown, same thing. Money and power corrupt, unfortunately. Yeah.
The thing that disturbs me a bit about the Maxwell agenda is that she always was interested in introducing redevelopment. She was on the
organization of the shipyard
right from the beginning.
For biotech.
That was the reason she became a supervisor. I think that she was on the PAC. And it was part of her duties on the PAC that propelled her to be a supervisor. So she's always been pushing for redevelopment. And we know that redevelopment is, and I'll just say this clearly, it's ethnic cleansing of the Bayview. I've said this repeatedly in the articles that I've written.
It's managed mayhem. There are many concocting forces together between the toxicity, redevelopment, eminent domain, police repression,
right.
and what have you, right. to push poor black and brown people out of Bayview, because it's cosmetically appealing right now. This
right.
is, it's land grab. That's a, you know, everybody thinks like, oh, the racist, no, it's all about the economy.
Right. It's a class thing.
Yeah, no feelings involved. It's about the economy.
And you've heard Ross Mercurini, who's the supervisor of District 5,
yes.
talk about how redevelopment, which infiltrated itself into the Western Addition back in the 60s, they're still experiencing the blowback from that right now. And that's why...
And not just the film. More look at Lower Haight,
right.
Upper Haight, Hayes Valley.
Right. They think redevelopment is not operational in the Western Addition. But in the King Garvey Cooperative, right. there's a very concerted effort between HUD called in redevelopment to continue the ethnic cleansing agenda.
Right.
And that's what I'm writing about right now. I'm investigating that right now.
More power to you. Since we are on the topic of ethnic cleansing, we just suffered yet another horror with the untimely death of Asa Sullivan in Park Merced. When you heard the news, and just quickly for the record for our auditors who are not familiar with the case, Brother Asa Sullivan was 25 years old. There was a complaint at the Park Merced apartments that possibly squatters were causing some kind of a public disturbance. The police came, they entered without a warrant. He hid in a 2.5-high crawling space, and they shot him 4 times.
My reaction to that? I was in the...
he was a guest who's a legal tenant.
Yeah, right. Just a personal experience that I had. On Friday, June 4th, I believe, I was in the UCSF ER, and there was a woman sitting next to me weeping. And I didn't want to intrude on her, but eventually she told me that she was there because her son had been shot down near the Safeway at Church and Market. You know where that is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on Market Street, about a month and a half before.
Mm.
And he was 26 years old.
Wow.
And this was a drive-by. This was not necessarily police. Within a week, I heard from three women whose sons had been killed by either drive-bys or police. The other two were police. And all 26. Now I'm hearing about Asa Washington and
Asa Sullivan.
Asa Sullivan. I'm sorry. This gets me pretty emotional. What is going on here? You know, this is San Francisco is supposedly a city that is accepting of all types of people from all types of classes, sexual orientation, and races.
City of the world. Well.
And yeah, supposedly. And I've lived all over the country, literally in every major city in the country. And I came here believing that there was going to be this acceptance. And now these African American young men in the same age group are being systematically gunned down. It's a shocking.
At the protest and rally against the death of Asa Sullivan by police, there was actually a young white girl, probably a student from state, who approached one of the cops who was watching the protest, and she asked him very respectfully, "Officer, isn't it illegal to shoot an unarmed man?" And the cop said in front of us, "No, that's suicide by cop." And Marilyn Boyd, the mother of Cameron Boyd, just burst into tears. Because you have heard that too many times. You know, my son also was a suicide by cop.
Idris Deli.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. And what was the anniversary of your son's?
That's on the 13th.
On the 13th of this month.
And
in Metreon.
Gunned down, just 7 days before. I heard, I need confirmation, but one of the person who was in touch with the family found out that four shots were received in the face. Supposedly he was in a shooting stance. How can you be in a shooting stance holding an eyeglass case when you are in a 2.5 high crawling space?
Somehow,
and maybe the police should be issued prescription glasses as well to end up the confusion. Or maybe some psychotropic to end the hallucinations that make you confuse a gun for eyeglass gas. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that.
Of course, I mean, the big question is, what is going on here?
It could be lack of training, okay? It could be panic that is due of lack of training. But where are the white kids shot by the police?
Exactly. Huh. It's a pattern. 26-year-old black men.
Yes.
What's going on? You know?
Or disabled black men as well.
Right.
Or brown men.
Right.
We can go all the way back to Aaron Williams 11 years ago, going to Marcos Garcia, Gregory Hooper, Richard Timms, a 90-pound African-American man with AIDS. He got AIDS from being violently raped in jail, who got gunned down like an animal. Craig Holden, Idris Deli, Sheila Detoy, Asa Sullivan. Sheila was white, but she was in a car with Latino kids. She was shot in the head at 17 by the police because, by mistake, the driver, I believe, backed up into the police car. Mm-hmm. One officer jumped out and shot her in the head. It's all associated somehow.
Mm-hmm.
With race.
Very clearly.
What's up with that?
Yeah, what's up with that? I asked that of the police commission meeting a couple of nights ago, I think, and didn't hear an answer. You know, I'm looking at these faces and I'm thinking, are they as confused as the community? You know,
some people
it raises more questions than it answers.
Some people are stuck also because they are participating from both sides of the fence. Mr. Ken Williams, who is the brother of Al Williams in government, historical society, is a retired cop. His son was shot by the police in 1997. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Tim Sillard, who worked for the district attorney, his lover, Jihad, with AIDS and dementia, was shot in the Castro by the police. Mm-hmm. All black.
So the thing that is really notable about it is how it savages the community. The young men are dead, the young women, but the effect on the community is profound and long-lasting. People have post-traumatic stress disorder from it. I was sat in that police commission meeting a couple of nights ago and watched the mother of Cameron Boyd talk about this, the pain that woman expressed. It goes on and on. Post-traumatic stress disorder doesn't go away. And it is also a threat to the community. When someone is shot, when there's physical violence, it's a threat. It's a clear message. There will be more.
Everybody suffers.
Everybody suffers. Takes a village. It takes one shooting to fragment a village. It's devastating to the community. And the scars are inside.
Right now, I mean, we're so politically hot and so dysfunctional. After the police Bayview videotape, you have the murder of Kathleen Eklund after a high-speed chase in the Sunnydale district. You have Asa Sullivan being executed. And it seems like the department is not even a bit nervous about the correlation, or they hide it very well.
Right. It's the flat affect around this that is very disturbing to me. Why aren't people getting more upset? This is murder. Why, you know, and it's amazing to me. Asa Sullivan was in a crawl space. You talked about mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. He was a father. He has
a five-year-old child.
He has a five-year-old child. Was the family there, or was he there alone when this happened to him?
He was with a friend who was a legal tenant. I just met the family, very educated people, very loving people. I shouldn't even say that. You know what? If they were hoodlums, that still wouldn't make it right.
No, it absolutely would not. No one deserves to die like that and then have their body cut out of a crawl space. Mm-hmm. It's horrific. And there needs to be an outcry. There needs to be more outrage. I think it is totally appropriate.
So, folks, if you do a search, if you Google Justice for Asa, A-S-A, Sullivan, it will take you to the website, Justice for Asa, that was created by Idris Telly Foundation. You have to excuse me. You know, I'm Hispanic, and I say Asa. You say Asa. You say tomato, I say tomato.
You have to excuse me, I'm Caucasian. And I say Asa.
Well, just all our love and support to Asa's family.
Yes.
It will not be forgotten.
No.
In a minute, we will be back on San Francisco Village Voice every Friday at 3 p.m., where every cat got a voice with Mr. Marlon Crump, known as a friend as Mad Cat Marlon.
No, Madman
Marlon, who also has created his own website for justice to the help of Idris Telly Foundation, is a client with us. He has been diligently going to the police commission every Wednesday since he's assaulted by SFPD, who will be right back.
Who you love. See, it's all about do you love. why it gotta bother me? What goes on in your bedroom ain't no mess to me. You say your God don't like my God, cause you don't like my friends. But your friends trying to kill a man, and I don't understand. Cause it ain't about who you love. No. See, it's all about who you love.
Get a San Francisco Village Voice in a village, and here's a Lamisha.
Right back at you, man. You're not gonna escape this, you know. Hey, Fernando, from the prison movement.
Yes, my sister.
What is your feeling about what we have been talking about here, especially about the murder of Asa Sullivan by PD?
Yes, Lamisha, my sister. It's most disappointing, only because people deserve better. They need to be treated better by the police services and all those who are involved with it, but it's just a reflection of the personnel that are police who are not trained to be non-confrontational, to de-escalate. As I was saying off the air, all the police need to be trained. They need to be trained in morals, ethics, and principles. They got to know that having a job doesn't mean you just do whatever you want. And thrown together with some style, class, grace, and finesse, then it's held together by the most ultimate adhesive, love. Love and truth. That's what holds it all together. I trip every day when I hear about all the abuse in this country. You know, there's a lot of issues on it, but the people in England, those little bobbies, they don't have no guns. They walk around. They have weapons, but it's like the regular cats. You know, they have to really communicate. They have a sense of real connection. And a lot of the dynamics you talk about of broken societies, broken communities, broken hearts, broken families, we really got to work on putting those pieces together. And with the police, the police, they're so broken, so fragmented. You know, Brother Man, who is from the OCC, Brother Man Allen, he's got a monster of a job.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a monster of a job that's almost impossible. You know, the credibility and the work product. You know, the person on the street never feels justice. Never feels justice. And that's based on the police not having what I just said, no morals, no ethics, no principles, because no matter what story you hear, we all need to know the truth. We got to see and be identified with the truth. So then all these dynamics, we hear story 1, 2, 3. First Brother Man was sitting in an attic with a gun in his hand, a squatter. It was his own home. How do we get all this confusion from people who are supposed to be honest and truthful? They have no morals, no ethics, principles. That's why all the people have to stand up and say, sure, cop, you got a job, you're getting money, you have no morals, no ethics, no principles. And the hook that I use for a diverse group of people, their God will pay them back. Their God will make them, will hold them accountable. Even though we're affected by that, Lamisha, the pain and suffering, their God will pay them back. And the best way I could do my best job, just be the best person I could be, and all of us here too. Be the best person we could be. And we know the police are not. And that's what the communities have to get together behind, be united, and say, now, forget about all the technical things. You have no morals, no ethics, no principles. That's.
And the thing is, I mean, maybe some of them have personal ethics, but the entry salary is $65,000 a year at high school graduation level. Actually, I got a call from Missouri from someone who wanted to become a cop, but they refused him at entry level because his IQ was too high. That's right. The guy had a...
We don't want no smart police. We don't want smart police who have some sense to know that, hey, this is how I fill out the report. This is the report properly filled out.
Right. But at the same time, even those who joined the force because they wanted to make a difference. And actually, I do know a few, you know, DeLacy Davis being one, Johnson, Lieutenant Con Johnson, was our candidate for Director of Community Policing, is another one. Yolanda Williams also, who have been put to pasture by the department because she was too close to the people. They do care, but at the same time, they got a house in Novato with a white picket fence. They got to maintain their SUV. They got to push their kid to college. And hey, you know, if you got to protect the rich and serve the rich, that's what you got to do for your family.
Yeah, Lamisha, it's not that all the... It's just the system in which they're really...
Is the institution.
Yes, it's to where, you know, people don't have trust for the police. I mean, it's, you know, in that element of emergency, people... waiver, should I call the police or should I not? You know, we don't have love for the police. The police do not externalize love. And so the training process of even those in charge, that's where they're responsible. The good ones are responsible for making sure that those ones who aren't properly trained, and they're all trained on the same book. We all believe that we care of these people to serve and protect. And once one person...
This is why in the meantime we need to protect and serve each other. We need to be tight and united in our neighborhoods. And we need to promote unity also between black and brown. Because there are forces right now, powerful forces, to antagonize us, Latino brothers against black brothers. You have people like Charlie Walker and Joe Bluford all over the air saying that Mexican immigrants, illegal immigrants, are stealing the jobs from the black community. So they are very powerful forces at hand right now. And we need to be very clear and very strong about the message that it takes the village and we're all together on this. Any last word of wisdom, Brother Fernando?
And I know you have...
You can cut in any time.
And I'm going to, but I know you have a wonderful guest over there. And he's just waiting to talk and he's got something on his mind. Brother and Man, Marlon Crump.
Marlon Crump. Marlon Crump, who is how old, 28?
Yes, I'm 28 years old.
And who has been assaulted by SRPD in his hotel back on October 7th, and who sought help from Idris Ali Foundation. That's how we met, correct?
Absolutely.
Can you tell us what happened on that night, on October 7th?
Well, it's kind of like, I try to, you know, it's kind of like one of those stories where I pretty much go over and over about it. I mean, I've actually had it publicized in the Mission Edition at the Mission Collaborative and Hotel Voices recently through Poor People's Network. October 7, 2005, I was outside, smoking my cigarette and stuff, and, I was watching South Park, the little crazy cartoon that comes on every night. And then, I walked in, came into my room and stuff, and I was actually getting ready to go to, the store up the street, Food Co., to operate my EBT food stamp card. And so as I was getting up, I was looking for my card and stuff, and I sat down, and I was getting ready to put my shoes on, and I replay this image every single day ever since that happened, by my door lock turning. And, so you can imagine what my reaction was. My first thought in the person's mind is somebody's getting ready to break in. And so as I jumped up, the door just, swung open, and there's like at least a dozen officers, all of them were pointing their guns at me, shouting obscenities. So, I kind of like froze for maybe a split second, and then I immediately, got down on my bed, spread eagled and stuff, and then one of the officers, he grabbed my arms and he put me in handcuffs and stuff.
Were they shouting obscenities at you?
Yes, they just shot some obscenities, which some, I can't really say on the air, out of respect for censorship and stuff. But it was the M and F, as you can propose, what the word, really means and stuff. And then, they had me in that position for, spread eagle handcuff, like at least 2 or 3 minutes. Then I asked one of the officers who had me in handcuffs, what was going on. And he mentioned about, how the suspect was described as being my height, tall black man, long black leather coat.
You're 6'3", correct?
Yes, I am. I'm 6'3". I mean, I got long legs pretty much.
And, long hair, ponytail.
Yes, I've kept my ponytail at least for nearly a year now.
So people think that you're an attorney because you also dress impeccably all the time.
Yeah, that's correct, Misha. The whole time, even before I got my SOO tenant room, which is actually right up the street from, this radio show, it took me almost a year to get that place through the Department of Human Services, and I managed to get that through the Homeless Connect event last year. And I was on a high priority list and stuff. And even so, I mean, when I was in a homeless shelter, I pretty much kept myself, clean all the time. Because, the public perception is that when you're a homeless person, you gotta have dirty clothes or...
I witnessed some of the attitudes towards you, actually. I heard a white man once time making fun of you and saying, "Why do you always dress like that with a suit? Do you have a job? Ha, 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 ha."
Well, it's kind of like almost like a ironic double standard there, to where, somebody where he may have so much money but don't know how to dress, and then the ironic thing about it is that somebody who doesn't really have much money but know how to dress. I mean, can you say goodwill?
It also addresses social attitudes about race and class.
Right, absolutely, and it's also about the way you perceive yourself and self-preservation and stuff. And just because of the public perceives you as being somebody with nothing doesn't mean that you have to have that same double standard perception in your own mind about, how they should view you. I mean, when you're born, you're not born to fit somebody's fantasy of how they want you to look. You got to be the man how you want to look,
Actually, you showed me a police report that demonstrated clearly that the suspect was a short man, about 10 years older than you, with a short brown jacket, although you had a long brown coat on.
And, that in itself really made me so mad.
Are we talking about racial profiling here?
Not only racial profiling, but, I was so furious and enraged. I mean, I was on the verge of literally snapping, because it's like an officer feels. Whenever they meet a suspect, the first thing they want is honesty. And so by me being a civilian, I expect that same courtesy from them. I mean, because they blatantly lied to my face and to the resident manager of who they were seeking, and that really made me mad. And even more so, the real slap in the face is that, it's just that the fact that how you can manipulate facts and personal public knowledge. And mind you, it took me 7 months to actually get the report.
You've been at the police commission every Wednesday, faithfully.
Every single Wednesday. I mean, as far as I'm being at City Hall, now, whenever they go to another location, it's kind of hard for me to go there because, I mean, I go there while I'm going to school. So it's like there are times when I'm at the commission for so long that I'm actually late for my class and stuff. And I've been trying to get my GED for the past year or so. Like, when I first came to the Cannon Barkley Community Center back in 2005, I came in January, and I aced every single subject within 5 months' time, except for my math.
You're an incredible writer.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you are. What was the name of the newspaper you had this article in that was so beautifully written? What was the name of it?
I call it... flaw enforcement, even my nightmares gave me,
enforcement.
Right, flaw enforcement, even my nightmares gave me a break by, Marlon Crump, that being yours truly. And
so what was it published in?
It was published through Hotel Voices, which was, actually in collaborative with the Mission Collaborative and Poor People's Network and stuff. And
couple, can you post it on indie media as well?
That's the thing. I was, talking to a few people there at the collaborative about that being, distributed online and stuff. I guess maybe they're working on it and stuff.
What is the name of your website that was created by, that's in conjunction with the Jewish Study Foundation?
It's called marlennium@yahoogroups.com. And let me spell Marlennium out because, I mean, I'm sure some people are not familiar with the name. It's marlennium@yahoogroups.com.
So if people Google Marlennium, they will probably get on your website and get to converse with you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm open for any concerns about SOO tendencies, especially in the Bay of San Francisco.
I heard something about a class action suit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Let me clarify that also is that, class action suits can be very, very effective. I mean, as far and very expensive, and that's another matter of finding that the legal, and I would say, either attorney or legal expert as far as representation of, multiple people who've been involved in the type of cases like similar to mine and stuff, and that's the only factor in this entire scenario is finding that the right people to get involved and want to represent, how many people who have the same issues as I have.
So the idea is actually to regroup similar cases of poor people who have been criminalized in SROs.
Absolutely.
Which means single occupancy.
Single room occupancy. It's paid for by the Department of Human Services.
And SFPD.
Mm-hmm.
Regrouping similar cases. Is there a number where people can call you if they want to, they have a similar case as yours?
Absolutely. They can call me at my number, which is 415-431-9870 with extension 20777.
Can you say that again, please?
It's 415-431-9870 with extension 20777, and which is a voicemail, of course, so just leave a message.
Or they can also call Idris Deli Foundation 24-hour crisis line, which is bilingual Spanish as well, at 415-595-8251. That's 415-595-8251. I see that, Carol, you really wanted to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, Marlon, you've told me a little bit about the personal effect of this break-in on you. And I wanted to ask you a little, if you can describe the effect that it has on you personally when that sort of thing happens. And also, somebody ought to say something about the Supreme Court decision that just came down about they can, if they break in, without a warrant, or just break in, because of Alito, they can use the evidence that they collect. And before, this is like the more devastation of the Constitution. But first, what?
We're in the land of Homeland Security and patriotic act.
Thank you very much.
Everything goes nice, gun home.
Well, I put it to you this way. I've dealt with PTS disorder for 15 years at least. I mean, because then I've...
That means post-traumatic stress syndrome?
Yes, post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Since childhood, correct?
Yes, since childhood and stuff. And I went through a horrific experience that only Misha knows about and stuff. But you know, it itself did a lot of damage to me a lot because it hampered my functioning and my studying as far as, you know, me conducting it. But it also made me very, very extremely cautious too because every single day, I watch and I'm very...
It makes you hyper-vigilant.
Oh yes, I'm very hyper-vigilant and I can sometimes be a little hot-tempered when, say for instance, somebody might bring an issue of them breaking in and stuff, and then they actually agree with the officers and stuff doing so, and I would get ready, and I would be ready to just lash out. But at the same time,
does it make it difficult to trust even people that you care about?
Oh, absolutely not. But it does make me very, very like. Even though I go to the police commission, you know, the aura of the tension and all the hateful stares and stuff. I mean, it's there. I mean, it's hard for anybody to contain this stuff. And at one point, I actually had anxiety because I was smoking excessive cigarettes and drinking a lot of coffee.
Especially around December. I was really worried about you.
Yes, definitely. And I really appreciate your concern. I was very, very grateful that you was there in my corner.
Likewise, my dear Godchild.
Absolutely. I really appreciate that and stuff. And it's like, even though I may present myself as being somewhat conservative and everything, you never know what goes on in a person's mind and in their head. And then we try to go with the system because, and mind you, I've been honest and fair with the entire investigative process, even with the officers. I mean, even when they came into my place, I was honest and fair with them. Even though I hated what they...
You slash your coat also, you leather coat.
Yes, that's the thing. They also did damage to my personal property and stuff. And, you know, that is something like...
But you had a big victory, I understand, 2 days ago.
Yes, absolutely. OCC has sustained
That's the Office of Citizens
Complaints. Yeah, I'm sorry, let me clarify that. The Office of Citizen Complaints have recently ruled the primary factors in my case of them entering my place without just cause was sustained, them pointing guns in my face was sustained, and also them having me, you know, in handcuffs, you know, without cause has been sustained. And other factors of them being making, you know, inappropriate comments and, you know, co-slashing wasn't that sustained.
Because you had no witnesses.
Right.
That's your word against theirs.
Right. But, you know, that right there, I can dispute later, you know, somewhere down the line. But what's important to me is that those three factors was sustained because what they did, I mean, the evidence was too overwhelming. I mean, they had no defense whatsoever. The police report itself incriminates all of them, every last one of them for their, you know, conduct and their interactions, you know, coming to my place. And it's kind of like, to me, it's not only a private demon for me, but it has also been my own personal 9/11. I mean, that's how I've treated this entire matter, and that's why I go to these police commissions every Wednesday. I learn, I observe, I see. You know, it's all my, you know, my human natural senses to a superhuman, you know, levels of stuff. I mean, I observe,
and
I listen.
Also, your compassion towards other people are being criminalized. You have reinforced my love and respect because I've always seen, ever since I met you, how your heart pours to other people.
Oh, absolutely.
And oftentimes, you know, when you're affected with PTSD, people get very self-obsessed.
Absolutely.
They get very paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that, yes, you have been frightened. You have been feeling watched at times. You have been feeling desperate but never loved. Your primary love and concern for other people. Any feedback, Carol and Fernando, that you would like to give to Brother Marlon?
Yes. I would like to say that when you go through something as horrific as that, to take assertive steps right away, as you have done, to not keep it to yourself, but immediately start acting on it. This heals you faster than if you sat on it. If you do something right away, talk, express it, take action, as you have done. I totally respect you, Marlon, for what you have done, and that you turned this thing around and got some satisfaction. That'll heal you or anyone else going through this faster than anything.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, and thank you for your comments, and I respect you as well.
Thank you.
You know, the way I see it, you know, it's just, to me, the fear factor has kind of like diminished, I mean, to significant levels. It's more of a being extremely cautious type of, you know, I won't say dilemma, but the word I'm looking for is... It's pretty much of me being more cautious into a form of me being like a soldier, like a fighter, you know, to the point where, you know, I don't let anybody intimidate them, I mean, intimidate me to come into my own home, because the stop and frisk seizure thing, like when somebody's being stopped on the street by a cop, and a person's mind is they're immediately being racially profiled. But the thing is with that, that's one thing. But when you come into somebody's home, that's to me, like, you know, way
back
old.
Back on the plantation, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because it's like, I mean, you know, there's no way in hell I'll let anybody, I mean, whether you're an officer or anybody, can come into my home when they actually had absolutely no right to do so, and more importantly, put my life in jeopardy as another potential OIS shooting. That's officer involved shootings for people who don't want to know what OIS is.
You would have sneezed, you were dead.
Absolutely. I mean, if I so much as blink wrong, I mean, I would have been just like the other others, you know, and as far as stats go and everything. Like what happened with Asa Sullivan, recently. That really made me very, very upset and very tense, because, you know, the fact that he was killed in his own place, and they call it be squatting.
Similarity to what happened.
Very similar, because at the time I was 27, he's 25 when they killed him and everything. So I can imagine, you know, in an alternate reality sense, you know, what would have happened if that was me? I mean, you know, how many bullets would have entered my body? You know, and how to, and more importantly, you know, by that being a senior occupancy, you can imagine a bullet might have hit a neighbor or anything. And you can imagine how, you know, pretty much how the office would have rolled up as being shootout with the robbery suspect, shoots out with the, you know, SFPD in own room and stuff. And everybody would have knew it would have been, you know, pretty much crap and everything.
Hermano Fernando, anything you would like to say to Brother Marlon?
Well, brother man, like I said a little earlier, the police need to know if they have to de-escalate. And de-escalating your cause would have been, oh sorry, wrong door.
And also, I'm sorry, I didn't cut you off, Misha. It also teaches them a lesson, also, because in some areas in the United States, By them committing this course of action, you never know whose house you're really going into, because a person could either be, I mean, hell, he could have been a Fed or FBI agent or something, and then they accidentally killed him, or a guy could have been out of fear for his life, actually would have shot through the door for fearing that somebody trying to break in because they announced themselves. And it is very disturbing that nowadays they're having this ruling by the Supreme Court with Samuel Alito and John Roberts. They have no idea of the ramifications that's going to bring, because if people don't know who's coming through their door, and I mean, it doesn't matter if they have a search warrant or not. I mean, I just have to say, for instance, an officer might come through the door, and as he's coming through the door, he's trying to say, I have a search warrant. The guy might have a gun in his hand, asking him to open fire. So they have no idea the grave
ramifications. In blue think that they have total impunity. Recently, we have four clients at the Idris Ali Foundation, all black, all poor, who have been assaulted by Homeland Security in downtown Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And you know one of them, Brother Melvin Hodges.
Yes, I met him at the...
And Sister Vivian Johnson.
Yes, absolutely. And they have no idea, but that's going to be a very dangerous and, ruling, because everybody knows that, you know, police departments are never perfect. I mean, you know, they got some good ones and bad ones. And the bad ones, by them hearing this ruling, they have no idea how... you know, significant that's going to bring. I mean, because people being terrorized in their own homes, and all they have to say is, oh, we had a search warrant, and he shot through the door. I mean, because that's a twisted backlash that's going to come up about this entire ruling. And believe me, you know how strong I feel about it, since these officers, they didn't even have any warrant whatsoever, and nothing more important, I was nowhere near the involvement of the crime. Can actually use that as their own type of tool. I mean, because they have, you know, political, you know, backlash as far as them having, you know, backing and everything.
And it's through the persistence and the integrity of people like you, Marlon, that we're going to see justice.
Oh, absolutely.
I personally believe that ultimately what's going to cut through this is voting and hitting their pockets.
Oh, absolutely.
Giving money and votes. You know, we need a new measure on the ballot to want police accountability. Obviously, no community policing is happening right now. Community Connect, Safety Connect, Blue Ribbon all went down the toilet. We need a new police reform. The police commission is lame.
Mm-hmm.
in spite of three new members that are supposedly progressive but still on an observation stance. Mm-hmm. We need a police reform and class action suit. Although they cost enormous amount of money, we can create a fund to have people donate to a class action suit mm-hmm. fund. And I know brothers and sisters who would love to give their $5 that are dear to them to the class action suit fund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Once we can impact the city seriously by negative actions of the police, and we can potentially throw that budget into a serious deficit, they're going to listen.
And also, I want to say this also, is that, you know, these SO hotel rooms are set up by, you know, Gavin Newsom and his administration to have, you know, the house formerly homeless people such as myself. So, I mean, how would, you know, Gavin feel if knowing that his own officers are coming out there terrorizing people or abusing them in their own homes?
You think he doesn't know it, brother?
Well, I'm pretty sure he knows it, but we should realize that to us as being formerly homeless people, did you put us in these places to where we can be not only harassed on the street by policemen, but be harassed in our own homes?
You know, I mean, he has his eye on a bid for the Olympic Games, obviously, for 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that he really cares about the fate of people in SROs? He wants all of us out of here. This is a touristic town. And I just want to mention quickly something that I used in 2002 to get ratification on the mental health mandatory training for SFPD. That was a $170,000 budget. Willie Brown refused to ratify it. And I belong to an association of socialist French citizens in foreign countries. So I emailed the world about it. And a week later, 27 embassies petitioned Willie Brown saying, if you don't ratify that training, guess what? We will not show. We are not going to come and visit San Francisco. 2 weeks later, he ratified the training. Of course, you didn't see that in the corporate press. It was never publicized. And I didn't need to because I got what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something, you know, when it comes to eminent domain, mm-hmm. when it comes to toxicity at the shipyard, when they want to put a cap on the toxic to build on top, I'm talking Leonard, about police reform, mm-hmm. community policing. If we don't get anywhere, I'm ready for another international boycott on tourism in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last resort, but whenever you hit their pocket and their clout, you get a response.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I wanted to say something about Lennar. I wrote about that one. Lennar is a corporation, national corporation all over the country. Lennar actually is building on a toxic Superfund site.
What is it about? Radiation, cadmium, phosphorus?
We're talking about the shavings off of paint off the ships that were near the bomb blasts. They're still there. You know, the half-life of that stuff is never. Never. Okay, so what they're going to do now is they're trying to create redevelopment. This is the hidden agenda, not so hidden to us, of homes for the biotechies who are going to live in Mission Bay. And those biotechies are going to come down and live in those condos, expensive condos that the poor folks in Bayview, the average salary is between $15,000 and $18,000 a year. They're going to be gone. But the biotechies are going to be living on a Superfund site. Now, talk about irony.
Nagasaki bombs are manufactured.
That's right. There was a big boy, I think, was the bomb. It was built there.
Fat boy.
They were built there. Okay? So the irony of this. Folks, Lennar built on a dump in Florida. This is well known. There was a guy digging in his backyard, and he dug down into trash in Florida. That's Lennar that built on that. So I encourage everyone to follow Misha's suggestion here, and let's get something started to stop this kind of stuff. I mean, hey, folks, white folks are going to start coming down with cancer, asthma, all kinds of stuff like that.
I remember Angela Liotto coming to campaign in Bayview for the mayoral elections, and I saw Dr. Ahimsa Sunshine say that when the wind blows, the taxis are actually going towards the marina and San Rafael, and Angela just took a piece of paper and a pen and said, can you substantiate that? Can you send me the statistics? When she found out that white folks can get emphysema, lymphoma, et cetera, from the toxic, we got their immediate attention.
Also, I also want to say something. You know, that the what happened May 1st was one of the most incredible things that I've ever seen. I mean, you know, me being 28 and everything. And it probably said hit them at their pockets. Well, I mean, even though it's nearly impossible, but what if every single mother got together who's working, of course, that's paying taxes to the city government, stopped working for one day? Because you know something, think about it. Every time you work, you pay for city, state, and tax and federal taxes and stuff, that goes to the police department. So it's like, since you guys won't help and protect us and not stop brutalizing the right way, we will not work for one day. And we don't
keys when they refuse to get on the bus.
Right? Oh, absolutely. You saw what happened with the boycott back in 55. Yeah. And said, well, since you guys won't treat us fairly, we will not, you know, right away. We don't care if we have to walk, catch cabs, hitchhike, whatever. We will not catch these buses. And you saw how fast Jim Crow changed Atlanta around. You know, because I'm like, you know, if this white person, you know, has a right to sit here, so do I. You know, and that same scenario work. You know, if this black person sits here on the bus, so should this white person. So there's a double standard there. You know, nobody should have to sit in a specific position because, you know, of his skin color or where he comes from, you know. And then on top of that, you guys are putting the same fare anyway. You know what I mean? So this is crazy, you know.
Money has no color, right?
Oh, I swear. I mean, there's only one color, and that's green. Well, nowadays, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, but
so we need to get politicians funded by us, not corporations, and that would go a long way.
No, absolutely, I totally agree. You know, I totally agree. You know, but you know that even though it seems kind of impossible because people are fearful of losing their jobs, but you know what? Every single illegal immigrant out there who wouldn't even happen when even from this country marched for one day, and I know that they got a hell of a response. Because, I mean, one day can make a difference. I mean, I don't care who it is, where it is. One day with millions of people like that makes a difference, a big difference.
And I'm so glad that you say that because it's so easy for us, you know, liberals to come and bitch about some things. Yes! But you are actually coming, both of you are coming with some feasible, concrete solutions that have a proof of effective record in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to San Francisco Bayview Village Voice. I'm going to ask for our guests' final comments and recommendation for all our brothers and sisters out there.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of getting justice, let's remember and keep in our heart Asa Sullivan and his beautiful family. Asa, you will not be forgotten. I know in my heart that you have now joined all our slaughtered angels and that you are watching our backs.
You know,
last word, folks?
Yeah, I have a last word. You know something? A woman's, especially women and mothers, are the most powerful voice in this entire. And I'll be the first to admit it. You know, women are very more powerful than men. I mean, you know, even though men has a masculinity, of course, you know, but the spirit is even more stronger than a man because you know something? A mom knows when their son has been taken unjustly. They know when something is wrong. They know they don't give a damn how far they gotta go as far as within the legal system to get justice. But they and Misha, I want to say this. You know, you had the most, you know, ungodly you had the most ungodly superhuman like strength that I've ever seen in a person because I mean you've organized so many. I mean I haven't met too many people like you at all. I mean you know I mean John Wash doesn't even have anything on you. I'm sorry to say that. I'm saying because I mean you worked hard. I mean even struggling with PTSD as yourself, you know. We're both similar. You know I mean so, to me you know you're more strong than I have because I mean the way you can organize stuff and you know.
Maybe at your age it was all play, okay? You were 10 times than I was at the time, so watch out.
Okay, fair enough. But honestly, you know, from a serious standpoint, you know, a lot of stuff that's just happening now is because, you know, you've been very innovative and, you know, you've done more than so many people have done in a lifetime. And you've done it in a very, very, you know, expeditious manner. And, you know, this is, you've got so many important people around and stuff, and you know, you're definitely my inspiration. You really are.
I am immensely proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, no more about me now, Miss
Carol. Oh, no, now we're in danger of there being more about you, because I totally, totally agree with Marlon about that. Misha is an absolutely, it works night and day. And
Joel, I'm the host here. We're not talking about me. Come on.
Well, I'm expressing the way I feel about this, that the lovely thing about progressive people like ourselves is that progressive people have a respect for human rights. We have a lot of love and compassion, and this is what we're talking about.
Bleeding hearts.
Yes, but I repudiate that. I think that our hearts are bleeding because our hearts have been wounded by bad treatment. And that this love and compassion is the very, very thing there needs to be a lot more of it. And you certainly have it. You certainly have it. And just my hat off to you.
Thank you.
Much love to you.
My beautiful black godchild and my beautiful new white friend.
Yay!
Go get them. Yes. You're listening to San Francisco Village Voice every Friday, normally at 4 p.m., where every cat got a voice.
It takes a village,
it takes
right?
A village. Right. You.
Yeah.
Kind of weak in the knees, learning late about the birds and the bees, falling in love when they be set free, playing ball at the age of 13, everybody's going up with a dream, I never noticed what could happen to me, time flies when you walk in the streets, one minute got you holding the nails, the next minute got you falling on your face, Queen City is a nasty place, only a rat can win a rat race. All of the time, biggest mistakes are the human in this kind. Just now.